This is a car show, but it's also more, because cars connect us to every part of our lives.
Families, careers, hobbies, and adventures we never expected. So you should have a car you love, and we're here to help. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd, and this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. Hello to all of you. Happy Friday. It is the end of another week, and we hope you've had a less crazy week than we have, because there has been lots of madness, and we want to explain our madness next podcast. Sorry for the tease, but next week we have some news to announce. Some of you that are our patrons have already heard. We have some news to announce about changes that are going on here, but I want to get ahead of one possible rumor. Have you seen all the I'm quitting YouTube videos?
This is just dumb.
We're not quitting YouTube.
We're not quitting YouTube.
Now, we also understand that YouTube is really not going to be someplace that's ever going to explode for us, but we are where we are, and we're going to continue doing everything we do, but there's new stuff coming, and we can't wait to share.
Don't miss it. That's episode 872, dropping February 13th, 2024. Moving on to a press car that we just recently had. Mm-hmm. It is the Volvo Cross Country B6 all-wheel drive Ultimate. We drove it, but we also have driven the prior Cross Country. That is on our test drive channel. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of changes. The engine is the 2-liter turbo plus E-charged. Now, it's E-charged.
With Volvo makes one engine. If you'd like a Volvo, this is the engine that you get.
They turbocharged it and they e-charged it.
They turbocharge it, e-charge it, supercharge it. It comes in all of the charged versions. Plus, you can plug it into the wall and charge it.
I've never heard of e-charging, but whatever.
There it is, yeah.
That's what they've done to the engine. 295 horsepower and 310 pound-feet of torque. With that 48-volt mild hybrid system that mm-hmm. every car company's doing with regen braking, the starter generator just pops the engine to life and gives it 11 horsepower. Now, this has the 8-speed auto with start-stop, which is the most annoying start-stop I've ever encountered.
Bit violent.
You cannot deactivate it anywhere. I've searched in the menus. I've looked at all the buttons. You cannot deactivate it. It actually causes a problem when you're at the light and the engine kind of chokes to life, and then you're trying to get away and everybody is starting to anticipate you moving, but you haven't moved. So the way to overcome this is to do a brake stand.
You're sitting there. You're the only Volvo going at the light.
It doesn't have to be a lot, but just
it's
a light
funny.
Brake stand
like
brings the engine back to life. 295, 310 is a decent amount of power.
Sure,
but I still feel like this thing needs more power. The only thing I was able to out accelerate was a 4Runner, and he didn't see me coming. I came around a corner and up the on-ramp.
Sure.
He got kind of angry. I didn't cut him off. I just out-accelerated him.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And he didn't expect a Volvo wagon to out-accelerate him. So I think that really ticked him off.
And you weren't even the hot one. I get it. Yeah.
But I actually got challenged to a street race full on.
What?
With hazards, bucking and choking at the guy next to me. And I'm like, who do you think
Why?
I am? What do you think this car is? It's a Volvo wagon. I could go street racing, but I'd lose a lot.
What on earth was that person thinking?
I fully got rolled up on and challenged, like, come on, hazards, let's go, drop the hammer. And I was like, I'm just going to lose. Are you doing this? Are you picking on people like me to make yourself feel better? Or?
You know, this is a Volvo wagon, right?
You know this is a Volvo. How dare you?
That's funny. Okay.
Full price, $73,380, including the Bowers & Wilkins premium sound, which actually is really good.
It's quite nice, yes.
Active chassis with rear air suspension, 21-inch wheels. But it is a wagon. It's a cool wagon, and
it's
we all love
looking.
Wagons.
It's great looking. Yeah.
The seats. I forgot to post a picture of the seats in the the Instagram posting.
Volvo and BMW.
They are spectacular. They have the massage function built in, and they're thin. They look like racing seats coated in leather.
I don't understand how Volvo's done that.
Massage function, heating, cooling, incredible support. The bolsters will squeeze you. You can control the seat bottom cushion under your thigh support.
Yeah.
You can control lumbar. It's fantastic.
We've seen this in their cars before, and I don't understand how they have cracked this and nobody else does. If you get everything in everybody else's seats, they are almost twice as thick as a Volvo seat.
Yes, and so the back seat has great space.
Yes,
It's excellent. I really like the seats.
It's crazy.
Haven't other car manufacturers looked at this and gone, our seats are clunky and thick and old and dumb.
Well, and the other thing,
Why don't we do that? The
typical solve is we try to figure out how to make our car have a even longer wheelbase and more cabin space. But if you can lose 2 or 3 inches off the back of the seats, guess where all that goes to? Backseat legroom, and the car got no bigger. I don't understand how Volvo's cracked it. They really have.
Last car that we are interested, saw news about, is the new Pagani Huayra R Evo. That gets a 900 horsepower V12. So if you're looking for a track car, call Horatio. I'm sure he can. He might even take your order. He might answer the phone.
Oh, no.
He might answer the phone.
You won't understand him if he does, but that's a side note. Yeah.
Well, he might answer it in Italian. But still, this thing is for track use. It's another one of those cars that is track use only. How many of these are they going to sell? But maybe it doesn't matter because of
it doesn't matter. And there's even a discussion that theoretically with the open top, it creates more downforce.
That's going to be quieter.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to need the noise canceling headphones will not get it done here, folks. I cannot imagine the sound of this. I am a huge Huayra fan. It's on my kind of dream car list. This looks spectacular and also remarkably unrequired and unnecessary.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We're celebrating the new year with new products from our friends at Griot's Garage. Wintertime means you might be stuck inside, but you can still clean your car with the Ceramic Rinseless Wash. It lifts dirt, grime, and contaminants and leaves behind a ceramic shield that enhances water beading and self-cleaning ability.
But if you're getting out the hose, Griot's now offers car wash pods. Just like the pods you use for a clothes washer, drop one of these in your wash bucket for the perfect amount of soap. These car wash pods even work with foaming sprayers and foam cannons too.
Or if your winter project has faded trim, and many of them do, try the Satin Finish Ceramic Trim Restorer that renews those old trim pieces and is even good for tires. Plus, there's plastic all-in-one to remove fine scratches and swirl marks and restore dull plastic surfaces.
Just remember, all Griot's Garage products are 100% guaranteed and all liquid products are made in the USA. When you're ordering at griotsgarage.com, use the code DRIVER10 for 10% off everything on your order. That's GRIOTS. Enjoy the finest quality car care products you can buy at griotsgarage.com. Our first debate comes to us from Jordan L. He and his wife are moving to the Kingdom of Bahrain.
Which is a crazy headline until you dig in and discover two things. First off, he's in the military. They're in the military. So it's not, they move around a lot anyway. But also, they've been there before.
They have. They know Bahrain. So after much teeth gnashing with the Navy, Jordan and his wife are moving there. They'll have a significant shorter commute, not 2 hours, and both he and his wife will have 9-to-5 desk jobs. Their orders are for a non-standard time of 2 years.
Okay, so slightly shorter than standard. Got it.
Which will be, he said they'll be good for them as a family, and they'll be able to bring their dog. This opens a new Pandora's box of a car situation for them and their 3-car garage.
Okay.
There's another huge issue ahead, and that is they're planning for their second child after they move there. So minivans are on their mind.
There's a lot of interesting procedure that follows here with what the U.S. Navy does. Now, we've talked about this before with many of the servicemen and women that listen to this podcast. The military typically will allow you to take a car with you when you go other places. And this is why you and I have been in Germany, driving down a tiny little back road, and a monster Ram pickup is going the other way.
Yeah.
That's not because they sold them there.
Suburbans way out here in the German
countryside.
It's not
because they sold them there. It's because somebody in the U.S. military brought their Ram truck. So this is where we get into that.
Okay, so the U.S. Navy will allow them to ship one vehicle. Like anything, they must go through this gauntlet of bureaucracy and inspection before the shipment. So he's painting this picture for us and therefore all of you listening. Bahrain will allow the vehicle into the country, but if it is older than 5 years, service members must leave with the vehicle when they return to the United States.
This is fascinating. So this means whatever car they take has to come back with them. There is no selling it while they're there. All of their cars are older than 5 years old. So when they're there, they will have that car. But since it's older than 5 years, they will take it with them. When they leave, they won't sell it to somebody and come back. So whatever car they take is coming back with them, but they have 3 cars to choose from.
Jordan says that he's been there 9 months on a previous tour, and that area is not kind to vehicles, even though like it, he says, like many Middle Eastern countries, has many exotics floating around. Bahrain is a small island in the Persian Gulf between Iran and Saudi Arabia. Half the population are expatriates and the other half are locals. But both make for an awful traffic situation, he says. When he was there on temporary orders, he had a government-furnished Hyundai van with a 5-speed manual. Ooh, sounds exciting.
This is how ruined I am by the storyteller that I am. I'm reading in that he is Black Ops. I have no reason to think. I have no reason to think that. But he had a government-furnished Hyundai van with 5-speed to ferry himself and, quote, his team around to and from work. And I'm building a whole Black Ops script in my head, which is probably not correct at all. But anyway.
Jordan says he didn't get into an accident while he was there, but others he knew were not so lucky. The weather is balmy in the winter. He says upper 70s and 80s at most, and brutally hot and humid in the summers, upper 110 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yikes.
With sand and salt, they're not keen. Jordan and his wife are not keen on bringing any of their cars there, but they need wheels. One positive point, which I didn't know, Jordan, there's plenty of support for all major brands of vehicles, including American manufacturers. The three cars that they have, first off, is a 2017 Jeep with 45,000 miles. That is right out. They do not want to bring that.
It's right out.
Because they love it. Mm-hmm. It has the lowest miles and highest value. He said it would be ill-suited for Bahrain as there's no camping or outdoor activities to put it through. Mm-hmm. And Jordan's wife loves it. Mm. She'd be devastated if something were to happen to it. So they've got a close relative who knows Jeeps well and will take care of it while they're gone. It is also not very friendly to one car seat and will not do better when they add a second.
Okay.
The second vehicle is a 2016 Ram truck with 73,000 miles. This is a good contender with its Lear truck cap, he writes. They've got security for the transport of strollers and suitcases and potential baby amenities. What do you mean?
Which there will
potential?
Be many. Mm-hmm, yes. A world covered in plastic, my friend.
You covered air conditioning. And Todd has brought up before that American cars and trucks with American air conditioning, that is what you want. So it's got the naturally aspirated V8 powering an air conditioner. He says overall simplicity for maintenance and the large cloth interior has been helpful when Cheerios get slung around by his ministers of chaos. The larger stance of the truck, the stock height, of course, is also safer with possible uptick in traffic risk. There are many parts of the city and the Navy base that are quite narrow, though.
Hmm.
Third on the list is their 2014 Audi S8. With 79,000 miles, this is the next best competitor after the Ram. Also good V8 power with good air conditioning, cooled seats, sunshades, and the ability to park in more places. It's got the extra sensors and cameras and not really too big for the streets, so it makes it ideal. The expensive maintenance, though, possibly expensive insurance and plush interior that the little ones will want to destroy... Premium gas, lack of stroller space in the trunk, that's the drawbacks. They also owe $8,700 on it, so that concerns them if they were to get into a fender bender.
Yeah, I hear that.
So Jordan is thinking either the truck or the Audi will be left with his dad, who enjoys treating cars well. So the long-term storage is solved.
Okay.
They don't want to sell the Jeep or the truck because they do like them so much. They want to have them back when they get back from tour. These paid-off cars would be ideal for a potentially financially stringent time. Later on, maybe. So they're just thinking about, don't sell, just hang on to them.
Yeah, but what's down the line, yeah.
What happens if they take the Ram? What happens if they take the Audi? Now, Jordan introduces a possibility for them to buy a second car or van in Bahrain if they choose, if they do not live close enough to base.
Okay.
But they are too far out to make that decision at this point in the process. They're moving mid-2024, but they need to leave a vehicle. They've got to have a vehicle picked out in the next few weeks to get the paperwork going, get all the logistics going.
For sure.
So they got to really pick it out soon and decide. So he's asking us, what do we think? By the way, Jordan, round one on the F1 calendar is the Bahrain GP in March 2, 2024. I know
pretty
you're not going to be there.
They won't be there, but it's pretty... I thought of it too. I did. I was
mean,
like,
they
huh.
take the F1 cars. Are there any F1 cars like still floating, like the older ones floating around Bahrain because they were too old and... couldn't take them out, and so you could get an F1 car with like a box on top for the family.
Honey, take the F1 car.
I've solved it.
Groceries are fast now. Oh my gosh. Jordan, I think for me, the clear answer here, and I'm going to go somewhere you may not expect at the end, but I think the clear answer here is that the Ram goes.
Bahrain.
That's the one that goes to Bahrain. Yeah, the Jeep needs to stay. The Ram can go. And the problem that I'm concerned with the Audi is the Audi has a level of preciousness to it. Even if you weren't taking it to Bahrain, you're talking about taking it with two kids and you haven't paid it all off yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I see potentially happening there is that car's overseas. The Audi was overseas. It does get dinged. It's still not paid off. The kids have made it nasty. Mm-hmm. It's still not paid off.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth? You don't want that situation. You don't want that level of stress. Now, while I understand the Ram, as we've seen even in Germany, it's a big girl. It's a big truck.
It's a big truck.
Wheeling around everywhere in Bahrain.
He says,
I understand
narrow
you're going to have some narrow streets. But if it gets dinged or something, you don't care. They're going to keep making more. And that one's fine. Yeah. And it's not special. And it's not precious to you. So I think the Ram goes with you to Bahrain. which means theoretically it comes back. The Jeep is obviously staying, but I have a tough love question for you, Jordan. Why aren't you selling the Audi?
I mean, maybe they are considering that. I don't see any
reason for the Audi to stay. I mean, you like it. It's a cool car, but you don't have it paid off. You're not going to drive it for 2 years, which means you're going to be paying at something that isn't being driven, which is actually better than it being dinged in Bahrain. But still, you're paying off something that's not being driven. And while the Audi S8 is cool, that is an older car right now. It's going to start getting more needy over time.
Especially if it sits. I mean, I know you're leaving it with your dad.
Yes,
but
for sure.
I don't
understand why the Audi is staying. My biggest question mark for you that I really want you to ponder here is, yes, okay, the Ram versus Jeep. Ram goes to Bahrain. I get it. The Jeep's got somebody to care for it. Wonderful. The Audi should go. You should sell it.
Yeah.
And then you guys have got a little bit of extra money. I mean, I know none of us have extra money, but you got extra money when you get back to actually go, what third car would we really like? Or do we want to sell either the Jeep or the Ram and get something else we haven't thought of yet? It gives you flexibility down the line. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why you're tying yourself to that S8 while you go away.
I'm with Todd on taking the Ram. Jordan, I think you should take the Ram despite the narrow streets, but it does sound like the best choice. I do think you should sell the Audi, but I also think you should consider selling the truck when you get back because pickup trucks are pickup trucks. I mean, I know love for your pickup truck, but still.
I agree.
You're keeping the Jeep and you'll know that it's in good hands and Jeeps. Yes, I get that. But the pickup truck, that doesn't sound like a very special truck. I mean, I know you guys like it, but I think you should plan on selling it when you get back too. I mean, I know the value won't be as high, but still. You can find another pickup truck eventually decide to go that route.
Well, and take the money that you got from selling the Audi and you combine. Yeah, for sure.
You can put that money aside from the sale of the Audi and just leave it there and get ready for when you're done, you know, done with your tour. I'm wondering, though, about, I know, Jordan, you're not here for the conversation. What about buying when you arrive? What if you kept the Jeep, it stays, you sell the truck and you sell the Audi and you buy something when you arrive. But more importantly, could you pre-arrange? Is there somebody who would have brought their car back, but you could say, I'll just buy it from you. Just leave it there. Mm. It's already there. It saves you all the hassle of the inspections and the logistics that you're talking about.
Maybe.
It's there. Now, you will want to keep that thing going. Does Bahrain allow that? So you buy it from somebody there, and then you have your tour, and then you sell it to somebody else after but then you're talking about a 5, 8, 10-year-old, 12-year-old car. It just stays.
And once it hits that older than 5 years, it's going to have to leave with somebody is what it sounds like.
Somebody's going to be left holding the bag. Maybe it's you, but is that still cheaper than going through all this hassle? And you won't worry about a thing. It'll be a car that's already there. It's already registered. Maybe it's a little bit beat up, but who cares? You're not there to be driving exotics.
The nice thing, though, is at least, and this we've had other service people tell us this, at least the nice thing here is you have hassle but minimal cost in getting a car there if you do take the truck. Mm-hmm. Hassle for sure. Mm-hmm. But the military is covering the cost, so you wind up on that other side of the Atlantic and many other bodies of water. You're in Bahrain now with a truck you know runs that is yours. You don't have to buy anything immediately. I get that. I take Paul's point. We've had this discussion with Guam and other places. What about just buying what's there? What are the options? That's certainly on the table.
And plus, that truck will be subjected to sand and salt and different conditions than it is now. And are you going to want to hang on to that? I mean, you'll sell it for a lower price just be like, hey, it is what it is, and we just want to get rid of it. But also, you've got to be open to what phase of your life you'll be in when you get back. Maybe your needs have changed. No, your needs will have changed.
There's two kids.
I guarantee
just came back from Bahrain. They'll be looking for those minivan doors.
Yes, you'll be looking for something else. And then when you're back, your life's going to be different. The area of the country you live, who knows? I feel like, look at the Ram as a temporary thing. Okay, maybe we take it with us, but now we're detaching ourselves from it. And therefore, you're not going to worry about using it there and then selling it when you get back. And then sell the Audi. Get rid of the Audi. Take the money and run. We're very excited to announce a new partnership with Battery Tender. If you park your car for any length of time, you need it to start. The last thing you want to hear is the labored whine of a dead battery. That's why you need a Battery Tender battery charger to properly maintain the battery in your vehicle to give it long life and quick starts every time. We're already customers. We use battery tender battery chargers on all of our cars year-round and especially through the snowy winter months of Park City.
Since 1965, Deltran Battery Tender has been the leader in battery chargers. Their BTP microprocessor technology and quick connect convenience automatically maintains the batteries in all your vehicles, lead acid, AGM, or lithium. Keep all your batteries in top condition. Visit batterytender.com and find the right product for you, including battery chargers, jump starters, inverters, and more. Plus, as our listeners, you can use the code EVERYDAY to get 10% off your order at batterytender.com. Dylan Hewitt is writing in from Canada asking about his V8 fixation. This is very interesting because we quickly run into FOMO here. The fear of missing out is all over this email. He's shopping to replace his V6 diesel Ram 1500 Laramie pickup. And the vehicles he's been looking at the most are the BRZ, the Audi S4, the Challenger, and the Mustang. And of those three, the Mustang appeals to him the most, but he's struggling with one engine because he could go out and get an EcoBoost right now. The 2.4-liter EcoBoost, four-cylinder turbo, he could get that immediately. But it does come in that really beautiful 5-liter V8 with his description here, ungodly tailpipe noises. So he's driven the EcoBoost, and he realizes that, you know, performance-wise, it's fine. He was able to spin the tires. He left the light. He was like, everything about this feels fast enough and like a more than enough car. The EcoBoost four-cylinder.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the problem. Enter Dylan's friends. They come rumbling up into the conversation because they have V8 Challengers and V8 level performance cars, and one friend has a V6 car, which is the Audi S4. He's down into stats now. This is what is both amazing and terrible. He's looked it up to find that the V8 Mustang has about a 1 second faster 0 to 60, so he doesn't feel like he's going to miss a ton of capability, but he is going to get a great amount of savings if he goes with the four-cylinder, except all his buddies have got that V8.
Dylan, thanks for writing, and thanks for validating my argument about sound and how sound is such an important part of car ownership and sports car ownership. All you guys and you and your friends, you're enjoying those noises. That's what you want. And you're asking us, is it worth it? Saving for the V8 sound, the rumble, and 1 second of performance.
Mm.
Theoretically, no. Mm-hmm. On paper, no, it's not worth it. But we car enthusiasts are emotional beings. We have emotions tied to our cars. And because I understand, we all understand what the car disease does to us, mm-hmm. I can categorically say, yes, it is worth it for you to save the money and spend probably what you don't have, maybe a little bit what you don't have and you're stretching. And I'm not promoting financial irresponsibility, even though I realize I kind of am. But still, if we were to recommend and really try to convince you to get anything but a V8, your heart is still going to want that V8.
I'm concerned about the same thing. Yeah.
You're just going to want it. And it's hard to explain to people who are not enthusiasts because they're looking at just the cold, hard reality. They're looking at the cold, hard numbers, and it doesn't make sense. But to you, to us, to everyone listening, it makes all kinds of sense. And so you also have to consider that just because you're getting this V8, I mean, we've established that, right? You're getting it. Okay?
Okay.
Give yourself permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Save and save and really figure out how you can do it. Because kind of running with the pack, my friends, we're all doing the kind of the same thing and you're all kind of in your club. I get that feeling. But you don't have to hang on to this car forever.
Yeah, that actually is the one
you're
of the
not
rabbit
obligated.
Trails I want to follow. Yeah,
you don't have to keep it forever. I mean, you might think you do, and it's a very live in the now kind of reaction, and I get that. But what happens in a year from now, 2 years from now? Your car tastes change. Your car friends suddenly switch interests, and suddenly everybody's selling their Challengers and their Mustangs, and they're getting other things, and you go down a different path. I want you to feel like you can give yourself permission to get it, but also it's not the forever car either.
That's very good. I actually am going to build exactly on where Paul finished, but go a little bit different conclusion. And that is, Dylan, look, first off, headlines are these. EcoBoost is all you need. It is.
It is.
It's fast. It performs well. The front end is lighter. You've driven it already. You thought, wow, this is quite powerful. It's all you need. And I almost guarantee if you buy that car, you're going to be one of the many people that tune it and give it even more power.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not the V8. And that's where it's very interesting. A part of me almost wants you to get that BRZ instead of the EcoBoost.
That's because the best choice, in my opinion.
Yeah, because then you even break the cycle of, what do you mean you didn't get the bigger engine? You bought a different kind of car than your friends at that point. You didn't buy the lesser one that they can look down on. And that's part of my question. Will you actually get pressure from your friends? Depends on your friendships. Yeah. Maybe, maybe not. Yeah. I can't begin to say. But here's my larger concern for you, Dylan. You want to get out of your pickup into a fun car. You've identified the fun car, an EcoBoost Mustang, that you could do now. I am concerned that if you buy the EcoBoost, you're going to always wish you bought the V8. I think that's true. However, I also think you need to free yourself, exactly like Paul just said, to how long do you need to keep this car? I think this, the EcoBoost Mustang you could buy right now and have that be your touchstone, your gateway into buying performance cars.
That's good.
And just buy it going, I know I like this. I know I want this. It's not the pinnacle. And I'm not going to put on it the pressure that it has to be around for a year or 10 years or 5 years. Nothing. I'm just going to buy it and enjoy it. And when it's time to move on, I'm going to move on.
So you're saying buy the EcoBoost? The four,
I'm saying buy the EcoBoost because can do that now. This is your transition car from I drive a big pickup to I drive a performance car. So you get the EcoBoost and you enjoy it. And when you realize, I really should move on. What is that answer, Dylan? What car is that? What can you afford at that point? I can't begin to say, but I think we all have this thing, and I was raised in it, Paul and I've talked about it a lot. We buy a car thinking we're going to have it for a decade. Why?
Why?
Buy an EcoBoost, and if you want to get rid of it in a year, and you can get rid of it in a year, do so. I would prefer, this is where I land. I do think you would potentially like the V8 more and potentially keep it longer.
Okay.
We're delaying your opportunity to actually get into a fun car that you can connect with.
I agree to that.
I kind of feel like if you really can, let's just say the difference between the two is a year. If you can get the EcoBoost right now, where are you in a year? So I'm going to encourage the EcoBoost to get you that life experience that allows you to grow somewhere else. But I almost beyond that would rather you got the BRZ. So when you roll with your buddies, you're the different car.
I do like that. And you might feel like you're going to have to do a lot of convincing, but you know what you're getting. You know what you're buying.
Well, but I almost bet you to a person, if your friends drive your BRZ, yeah, they might make fun of the fact you have less power, but they're all going to get out of it and be like, that's a really great car. I don't think any of your friends,
they will say
if
that.
They drive the new BRZ, are going to get out of it and be like, why'd you buy that? It might not be for them, but they're all going to go, ah, I get it now.
Okay, so Dylan, what if we flip this on its head and you are the one who instigates the change? By buying that BRZ,
I like that.
Everybody's going, well, you know, try to clown you at first, like, you know.
A year from now, it's all 86s and Mustangs and his crew. That's funny.
Right.
I like it.
And well, yeah, Dylan started it because, you know, and we found it. And you're driving differently. You're doing more canyon driving. You're doing more high performance driving that involves corners, let's say. That's where that car shines. But I do understand sound is important. But either way, I like that you're using this as a stepping stone, a gateway. And that is our thinking to a lifetime of great cars, great car ownership, and discovering different kinds of platforms. The BRZ is not even close to being like the Mustang or the Challenger. It does different things and it rewards you in many different ways.
Yeah, that's very good.
But it is still every bit as valid, just like you've listed, Dylan. And I know you're still wrestling with this and you want a concrete answer. Obviously, only you can answer the questions, but hopefully one will stand out as carrying more weight, whether it's the four-cylinder Mustang, the V8, or considering this V4. I don't really think you should consider the Audi. I mean, it's a good car, but I don't think it's what your heart desires at this point.
I agree. He's leaning toward the Mustang. Why not get the four-cylinder?
Yeah. But ultimately, I look back at my first 928 ownership. And I spent $19,000 on it. I had to finance 10 grand of it. I put $9,000 down.
I remember how worried you are when you did that. I remembered that totally.
That was the worst financial decision I could have possibly made.
Yeah.
However, it wouldn't have led to what you and I did with our classic car series.
It's a very good point. It wouldn't have probably even led to this show.
No, that wouldn't have happened because I got that. And then shortly thereafter, you got your first Z car.
I know.
And we discovered these cars and we're looking at each other like, wow, these are fun sports cars. our driving has changed already. Yeah, and suddenly we're talking about tires and we've never done that before. And
yeah. Yeah.
I had no idea that it would lead to all of this, and your experience will vary.
Yeah.
But what I should have done with that $9,000 was invest in Apple stock. I should have done that. And I was considering doing that at the time, thinking, well, it's this, you know, they're doing pretty well. And I used an Apple in my design career, and I should have put that into Apple stock, and I would be really well off right now. But I also wouldn't have had that connection, Todd, to you, to we wouldn't have been able to create that series later on in life. That would have never happened because I wouldn't have owned a 928.
That's interesting.
And connect it back to why we bought others and did a four giant road trip series. That life experience wouldn't have happened. So that's why, audience, I always kind of err on the side of maybe do the stupid thing, maybe spend a little bit too much money, because you don't know where it's going to lead. And ultimately, is more money in your life going to make you happy, or is the experience going to make you happy?
It's a great point.
With your friends. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm trying to get at. And that's what I'm trying to connect. Overspending and doing a little bit of the stupid financial thing. I was barely able to afford it. Let's put it that way. Yeah. But I should have put that money in the stock market, specifically Apple. I was thinking about it. I should have just bought Apple stock. I would have been a multimillionaire at this point.
Interesting.
And I don't care.
Okay.
I would have rather be able to speak to this experience to you, Dylan, and to have Todd and I do the road trips and experiences that we did, because you can't buy that.
Wow. A bonus third car debate coming to us from Chris, who's writing in about British everyday drivers, which is a terrible combination of words that most people would avoid. I mean, let's be honest, that's really the reality.
Minis and Bricklands and Rovers and...
Yes, wait. Oh my. Anyway, he says his car ownership has been over 40 years. He's owned pretty much everything. He loves finding depreciated bargains and bang for buck. Can I interest you in a Phaeton, sir? Sorry, he said especially either Japanese or German.
What part of that is British? Is there any part of that?
No, there's not,
British?
But he said he's owned a lot of Japanese or German bargains.
Okay.
And I'm like, you know, wonder over here, have you owned a $5,000 Phaeton yet? Because we can tell you stories. Anyway, thank you for watching what we do and already following along with that. That's great. He has just noticed the depreciation rate on Jaguar Sports GT cars from the early 2000s. He's looking specifically at the X100 or X150 generations. It's the XK or the XK8 or even the XKR Jaguar. Now, this is the 2+2 Grand Touring Jaguar before the F-Type. That's what we're talking about when we talk about these cars. He said he can find them all day long for $10,000 plus or minus, and nice late model XKRs are easily in the mid-20s. He goes, what do we think about that as a daily driver? Is it the least bit driver friendly? Is it better than something like a Maserati of the same era? Yes. I don't even care what car you're bringing. The Maseratis, remember the coupe, the mid-2000s coupe?
Oh, yeah.
That car was not only ugly, it was wildly unreliable. It had two fantastic strikes against it, so it'd be better than that. Anything's better than that.
Darn it.
He'd love to get our take on him. I'm sorry. He'd love to get our take on him. He said he understands most of them are automatics, but he's very curious what we think. I researched these a bit. This is a fascinating question.
Did you dive into
it? I really did,
Okay.
The thing about him is, and this is not going to be news, get as late a model as you can, because they kept fixing things. The other thing...
Continuous improvement.
Yeah. The other thing is that the XKRs, which are the more hardcore version, they're still a GT car. But the XKRs were slightly more powerful, but in general, they were more robust because they were the more powerful version. Yeah. So those are actually worth the upcharge. Things I found that typically go bad, apparently ignition coils go bad. You like got to keep a rack of ignition coils in a drawer on your wall.
You do?
I'm kidding. But
but I'm actually
but,
not.
But expect those to go bad. Early ones had a plastic water pump housing, which of course that's a ticking time
bomb.
Who
thought that through?
Those were early. Also, apparently the front suspension bushings go bad like they were made out of paper. So supposedly that's a fairly quick fix, but they go bad quickly. Look, if you see any car for sale and it looks like it's tipped forward on its nose at all, like the wheel gap in the rear is bigger than the wheel gap
Phaeton
on the front.
Phaeton owner speaking here.
Yes, exactly. That is because the suspension bushings have already gone bad. And they're selling a car where the bushings are in need of replacement right now, even though they just wear out, period, on all these cars. So latest model as you can. I would just go ahead and get the upgraded XKR because that also had an upgraded different transmission. The early transmissions apparently were problematic. This is all stuff I found by digging in a little bit online. This is an interesting unloved car. And when you get into the XKRs, they become kind of quick. I remember Jeremy Clarkson liked them. Granted, mm-hmm. it was a British Jaguar, so he was going to like it, okay? But he was going to say nice things. Yeah, that's teed up for him.
Yeah.
But I think this is an intriguing car of that era. I want to circle back to, I would buy this a dozen times over that Maserati of the same era. A dozen times.
You're right. However, Chris, with this discovery, and now everyone knows about it, don't become the person who's bought all the cheap early ones, like you said. Now you've got a driveway full of stuff and like, oh, well, I bought a project car to fund that car to strip parts off for that.
Be a parts car for this car, yeah.
I mean, the thought has crossed my mind for 928s, and I went, nope, take a breath.
Uh-huh.
Nope, don't do that.
I will walk you away from that junkyard.
I have also seen photos, people who have collected 928s mm-hmm. all around, and there's like five or six of them in their yard, and now they're trying to get rid of them. I'm like, no, why didn't you keep them running? So settle on one of those later XKRs. I do like that. I will add my personal opinion. I like the XJRs. I think they're actually sexier.
Mm.
I really like the XJRs, like 03.
Yeah, they are cool. They are very cool.
They're just cool looking, unique, and most of them have low miles, but still, I hear you on the GT thing, but get something that's actually pretty nice, well taken care of, and yeah, don't pay very much because, and you're rocking a Jag. It still looks very expensive and has that perception
they're unique.
To people.
They're very unique in a great way.
I do like that. Chris, thank you for writing. If you've got your own Topic Tuesday, car conclusion, or most of all, your car debate, write to us at everydaydrivertv@gmail.com.
Lots of good questions as always. Thank you, guys. We want to remind you that we typically ask for questions on all of our social media channels on Mondays and Thursdays for these podcasts that we record that come out on Tuesdays and Fridays. If you have the longer stuff, the Topic Tuesdays, that's what the email's for, the quick questions. We love those, getting those on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, X. We follow up on every now and then, but it's mainly Instagram and Facebook. So hit us up on those, and we're happy to hear comments and questions. Also, we look and we do pay attention to our very nice, generous patrons who are on a Discord channel. They end up getting into conversations and debates, and we look at those too. So thank you guys for all of that. I'm going to start with Mike on Facebook, who says, he posts a picture, and I had to dig in on the picture, really see what he was posting. The picture is listings of Maseratis for sale.
Yay!
And there's an MC20 Coupe, mm-hmm. the hypercar supercar, mm-hmm. above the GT Trofeo, the Gran Turismo Trofeo that we just drove and was on our test drive channel, and they're within 10 grand of each other. And his question is, what is going on here? And since we've driven both, which one would we pick and why? And he's sitting here going, do these deserve to be the same price? Well, what you're looking at here is the MC20 Coupe, I can't believe I'm going to say this, is the base version. Because the Cello, the convertible, is about 100 grand more. Which is astounding. We have a review of that coming very, very soon.
For the same engine and same performance.
For the same car, but without the really cool retractable top. So
and the base car's lighter.
You're looking at the base coupe, which is a funny thing, and you're looking at the top trim Trofeo. I don't think it's the same buyer, first off. But if it were me, I'd buy the MC20 every day. All the time. For the same amount of money, I'd buy the MC20. But that is a focused supercar, hypercar, and the GT Trofeo, you actually could get people in the back seats if you're not trees like us. And it is surprisingly good four-seat grand touring car, which you could actually use as like your daily.
Matt Guerra on Facebook is asking about this new Keres TC2. It is a Dutch company. If you go to KeresCars.com, it's the word car and ice, cars.com, Keres Cars, and the TC2.
Hello, Keres. Is anybody else hearing Silence of the Lambs or is it just me?
There you go. This is a really tiny little car built in the Netherlands. It's lightweight, dynamic, and elegant, according to the website here, mm-hmm. and it is all electric. And Matt's question is, has Keres Cars cracked the code to lightweight electric fun cars?
If you'd also like to make something that's almost a Porsche.
It's a 356. It has the 356 look.
They had a 356 on the wall.
Yes.
And they were like, let's make something that looks almost lawsuit-inducing close to that, like just this side of a lawsuit.
I see mm-hmm. why they did it, because the 356 is one of those kit cars that is built mm-hmm. like crazy and beloved, and yep. I get it. The real ones are stupid expensive.
They are.
Maybe, but this is not to my eye here. I mean, it's got an engine turn dashboard and a vintage wood rimmed steering wheel. It's for motoring. When we say lightweight fun cars, we're talking about Miata and GR86 kind of, I could take this and put really great tires on it and go after a great canyon carving day or a track day or something like this. You're not going to do this with this Carice. If you do,
you're probably right.
You're going to be frightened. The seats alone is the dead giveaway.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
They're good, but they're not designed to do canyon carving. I think you would quickly slow down, realize this is not the car for that.
It's an experiential car.
It is.
It's an experiential convertible. And you really are
in that
buying
category,
a 356. Yeah.
Kind of.
In electric.
I like that they're doing this, and I like that it's getting out there. But it definitely seems more for the purpose of motoring and cruising around, and you're not doing real high speeds and canyon carving in this.
I mean, I love how light it is. It's very, very light, and that's interesting. But yeah, we'll see.
It's cool, but it's just a little bit too 356 for my eye.
It's
a lot too much.
Very 356.
I need a little bit of extra character somewhere.
Well,
there's
it looks like
solenoids on the door. There's no handle.
It looks like 356 and classic Beetle in a blender. It really does.
Which is kind of the roots of the 356. Which is the reason,
yeah, it's like right between the two.
Yeah.
And I applaud them for doing it. I agree with you. This is an experiential car. It doesn't seem like a, you know, hardcore car, but I love how small and light this is. That's really cool.
This is interesting. Thanks for bringing it to our attention. You don't see them out there very much, but I think they've cracked part of the code, Matt. Mm-hmm. I think that's the answer.
Ted Adam Green is writing in confused. I'm going to try to answer this confusion, but where you're headed here is almost a topic Tuesday of car review. He said he just saw a recent review of the current ND Miata, and the reviewer, who apparently owns the car, said it doesn't handle well, said it leaned too much, drove like a car from 30 years ago. He said, can we please give this some context and explain if this is right or not? He said he personally, Ted, likes a car that's planted, doesn't mind some lean. He has a base Veloster that he says plenty planted, and he joins it for autocross, but he couldn't believe this reviewer was saying that he daily drives this ND Miata and he wouldn't buy it again because it, quote, drives terribly.
Strange words.
Okay, Ted, have you watched our Miata comparison piece, All Four Generations? When we recorded that, the ND had just come out, and it was the ND1. Now we're in the ND2. With the revised engine and some revised suspension, but the revised engine is key. I think it's 2019 and up. And there's rumors about the ND3 coming with more tweaks. The touring version of the ND1 disappointed us. In that video, it disappointed us. I picked the NC, the third gen, over the fourth gen, even though there were things about the fourth gen I liked. And my number one problem with the ND when it first was launched was the engine had no character. And why does it have so much body roll? It had tons of body roll. Now, we had the touring suspension on it, the grand touring suspension on it, not the sports suspension. The sports suspension helps some. But even the sports suspension doesn't go far enough to make that car corner as flat from the driver's seat feeling sensation as the 86. The 86 from the factory comes with a setup that is much flatter and feels much more focused than the Miata. But think about the target audience for the Miata. The target audience for the Miata welcomes the body roll and the movement because they aren't hardcore. And if, here's the flip side, if you are hardcore in your Miata, you're going to change the suspension anyway. Mm-hmm. They know you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what I wonder is, does this owner have an ND1? Because it got much improved with the ND2. And do they have the touring suspension? And I will say, every stock Miata, RF or otherwise, that I have driven, in fact, Utah meetup 2 years ago, I climbed out of my Elise directly into a Miata RF and was blown away by A, very fun, and B, wow, there's a lot of body roll.
The engine is in a different place.
Yeah. So the car was designed from the factory in every form, even in the sports suspension form, to actually have a lot of body roll. So when you're going 30, it feels like stuff's happening.
Yeah.
There's just, I must be flying.
There's action.
The car actually has excellent grip, but there's a lot of body movement. And it's not, here's the thing, some cars, when they have body movement, it feels like they're out of control. That's not the ND. The Miata has very well-controlled, taut body movements. It's just there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've driven it. I've thrown it around a corner where all the body roll goes over and then it fully settles the suspension. And now you're sliding and it's a wonderfully controlled oversteer slide. The car dynamically is superb. It is softer than I like. Mm-hmm. And I think it's softer than most people expecting a sporting car are going to like. But it is wildly fun, handles very, very well. And I would love to know what actual Indy this owner has. There's no question it's too soft for my taste. But there's also no way to say it doesn't handle well.
Yeah, for sure. Also, Mazda has to sell cars, so they would err on the side of having a softer suspension, knowing there's a giant community out there. If you want to make it stiff into a race car, fine.
Yep.
Go buy your suspension. On Facebook, Mitchell Edwards is worried about the Lexus IS. Mm. With Toyota and Lexus going all in on hybrids and PHEVs, he says, if any company could make it amazing, it's Lexus. It could become the de facto sports sedan for those of us enthusiasts who drive the 20,000 plus miles a year. Mm. On the other hand, no one has done the hybrid sports sedan well, Volvo being the closest. Volvo is close. That is a sleeper if there ever was one. I'm curious to know about the new C-Class Mercedes. It's still the mild hybrid there, but I'm really interested in driving it. But there's also the Camry. The ninth generation Camry has now been introduced. We have not driven it yet as a hybrid.
Yep.
And you see in the news that Toyota is GR-ifying everything. They've announced the Crown.
Yeah.
The Camry can't be far behind.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, what if the Crown is suddenly like, okay, I hate to admit this, but it's good.
The Crown.
The Crown. What if it's good? And what if they do something GR related to the Camry? They're not going to kill the Camry for the Crown. Would they? And the Crown wouldn't replace the Camry.
No.
The Camry is too beloved. So therefore, if they want a performance version out of it, they're going to do something. And now the Camry only comes as a hybrid. That's it. Mm-hmm. Like the Venza. Well, the Venza is going away. But like the Sienna.
This is where they're headed. Yeah, for sure.
So if they want to GR-ify anything, this is the platform they're going to do it with. And I wonder if the lowly Camry could suddenly become interesting.
Ooh, interesting.
Over on Instagram, Bitter Car Guy says Ford has decided to remove self-parking technology from its cars to save money under the premise that nobody's using it anyway.
Okay.
What other features should manufacturers remove due to disuse? How about remove due to my vitriol and my hate for it?
Got it.
That is the lane change assist. That is the servo in the steering that overcorrects when you drift 1 inch outside the center of the lane.
Yeah.
It corrects and it jerks the wheel back and now you're fighting the car.
Yep. Yep.
We are all not the drivers that car companies need to be worried about. All of us listening are not those drivers. And some cars, I can't find a place to turn it off. Some places you can't turn it off. And then I'm fighting buttons on the steering wheel and cruise appears, then adaptive cruise. Well, adaptive cruise is another one in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I don't like it. I've met people who like it.
Yeah.
I can't stand it. I can't stand it because now I'm forced to go to the speed of the person who doesn't know what they're doing and they're on their phone. And now I'm in a pack.
The only way it works is if you're in stop and go.
That's the only, but why can't that be a choice?
Moving at freeway speeds, it should just be a thing you don't use.
Oh, yeah. The lane assist, the it bumps you back in and now I'm fighting the wheel. Now I'm jerking it the other way and the car's swerving in the road and that's not good.
You've also reminded me of that thing in cruise control now where you have, when you have three or four modes of cruise control and you're driving and trying to pay attention and trying to set the cruise control. And every time you hit cruise control, it cycles to a different, slightly different icon. Yeah, I'm sitting here going, what is that icon versus? So that's a clock and that's a clock with parentheses and that's a clock with another car beside. I don't know what any of these are. You and I climb into so many cars that whenever I'm cycling through cruise control, I literally like, I guess I just can't use it because I don't know what, there's like four different logos.
We need Apple to design the UX for all of those icons. It's one UX for all of those. So we know whatever car you get in, like, oh, I recognize that. I understand what it is. I don't have to fight it. Oh, man.
Eli writes in on Instagram and says, what car in the last year is one we wished we got to review but didn't have the chance? I can think of two right off the top of my head. The Lotus Eletre, which is on our list still because it is, Lotus makes an electric, large, heavy SUV. None of those things typically go with the Lotus branding, but I am curious. And the Cadillac V-Series. We didn't drive the CT4 or 5 V Blackwing. I would like to drive both of those in manual, please. We actually had a couple opportunities, and the scheduling just didn't work out. So they're still on our list. And now with the refresh, I'm even more intrigued.
Eli, I'm going to add the Corvette E-Ray. Not the Stingray.
Oh, the E-Ray. E-Ray. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Got the Stingray.
We didn't drive the Z06 either.
Or the
both
Z06.
Of those would be great, yeah.
I will also add a Gunther Works or a Singer. I would really like to drive one of those. And I'll bring microfiber to wipe up the drool, and it'll be fine.
Excellent, yes. Right.
Thumbing My Way says, any itches about the Mondial on Bring a Trailer currently? I saw that. It's gray with red interior. It's a Mondial T, by the way.
Ooh.
And I don't know what it's going for. Last I checked, it was at $61,000, but I really like it. Talk about the last thing I need to buy and spend money on.
Yes, the last thing you need to buy. Uh-huh. You have the 928 filling that old car that needs things. Let's not add to that. Yeah.
Guys, thank you for all your questions. We really appreciate it. Looking forward to hearing from you. And we're always looking forward to next time.
Big news next time.
Big news. Cheers, everyone.